May it please the court. May proceed. Good morning. The disciplinary hearing panel adopted the joint stipulation of the informant and the respondent as its decision in this matter regarding Mr. Lacks. And in doing so, it is our position that they properly found that the respondent violated Rule 4-1.782 because of his inappropriate comments and the fact that he made them. It presented a significant risk that his representation of the underlying complainant could be materially limited by his personal interest that he expressed in her. And they also found that he violated Rule 4-8.4D as a result of those same comments because his conduct in doing so was prejudicial to the administration of justice. The disciplinary hearing panel, it is our position that they properly found that the reprimand was the appropriate discipline in the case. And the reprimand, we feel, is supported by both the ABA standards and Missouri case law. There was not a lot of Missouri case law on the issue of sexual comments, and so we also looked to what other states had done as well, just, you know, to try to inform the decision that our position in entering into the joint stipulation and then ultimately the decision that was adopted by the disciplinary hearing panel.
Could I ask you to clarify what the facts are?
Yes.
One of Mr. Lacks's arguments is that he should not be subject to a more harsh discipline than a reprimand because his conduct did not involve repeated conduct. There was not repeated inappropriate conduct. In the complaint filed by SM, she alleges that during the representation, he made repeated unwanted sexually inappropriate comments to her, which does not appear that those only occurred during one instance in his office when he propositioned her to pay money for a sex act. And so what are the facts as to whether there were inappropriate sexual comments made during the representation other than the one instance on May 16?
Yes, Your Honor, and it is our understanding that there were multiple comments, but they were all made in that one conversation, so that such that there was the one incident, but it included multiple comments. In fact, it is my understanding that subsequent to that, the complainant, Ms. SM, indicated that he never made any further comments of that nature to her and in fact continued to represent her with regard to the matter.
Is that it somewhere in the record?
I believe that it is in the record. That I'm going to flip to the brief for just a moment, I apologize, but that she in fact stated that it never happened again.
I couldn't tell whether that was the proposition of money for sex never happened again or whether it was that inappropriate comments never happened again.
Again, I apologize that my eyes aren't falling on the exact reference, but yes, it was all along, and that was part of the reason why we felt that the discipline of reprimand was appropriate, because in other cases, such as N. Ray Howard, where the attorney was suspended, there were multiple incidents and multiple complaining parties involving that attorney.
And SM did not make her complaint until after the representation was over?
The representation actually was continuing, to my understanding, and when she made the complaint, and she decided to continue to have him represent her, and it did not happen again. I would imagine by now it's completed, but in terms of when she first made the complaint, I believe that the underlying action, the divorce modification, was still proceeding, yes.
And that goes back to my question, because it wasn't clear whether it never happened again once she made the complaint, or it never happened again after May 16th.
Yes, I understand the confusion and apologize for that. It's our understanding that it happened once, and she filed a complaint. I don't recall within how many days. I know the incident was May the 16th, and we got the complaint for investigation. We received the complaint in September. So that there were months in between when the incident occurred and when the complaint was filed.
But the matter was not concluded until, do you have that in the record, the date in which her modification came to a conclusion?
No, that is not in the record.
But it was after September?
Yes. With respect to case law, as I've mentioned, with regard to N. Ray Howard, where this court refused to reprimand Attorney Howard because of his, again, pattern of sexual misconduct, his refusal to acknowledge the wrongful nature of his conduct, which of course is not the case here. From the beginning, when the complaint was actually filed, Mr. Lacks answered the complaint, acknowledging and expressing remorse for his actions. And then also in N. Ray Howard, there were multiple violations, as I mentioned, not just the one complaining party. We would also point out that Mr. Lacks has been practicing for 46, 47 years, and in that course of action, this is the only complaint of this nature that has ever been filed. And in fact, he's only had one disciplinary action against him, which resulted in 1995. And so since 1995, there's been no disciplinary record, if you will, against Mr. Lacks, which is another reason why the Office of Chief Disciplinary Counsel felt that a reprimand was the appropriate discipline in this case.
Should we treat sexually inappropriate comments, such as in Howard, differently from what amounts to criminal solicitation?
In Howard, I would advocate that, in my understanding of the facts that were set forth in the case, that in his manner of approaching the complainants in that party are similar. I wouldn't call one criminal and one, meaning Mr. Lacks, criminal and Mr. Howard's not, nor do I think that Mr. Howard's actions amounted to criminal activity as it were, but I can be brutally honest with you and tell you that the Office of Chief Disciplinary Counsel did not look at it in terms of a criminal act, and we did not analyze it in terms of a criminal act because we didn't see it as being one. And N. Ray Howard, based upon the facts that were presented as well, I wouldn't have viewed those as criminal acts either.
Do you agree that it is a crime to offer money for sex acts?
Yes.
So in fact, you didn't process it as a criminal act, but the facts would support it being a criminal act.
That under certain circumstances, it could be deemed that,
what are,
yes,
the circumstances under which it couldn't be?
Well, I just don't know. I don't know what the underlying elements are to make something a criminal. You know, if it's merely you ask them a sexual act in exchange for pay, if that's sufficient, then the answer would be yes. But I don't know what all the elements may be. So, and again, you know, we just didn't analyze it and view it in that context.
As I recall, the Howard case, he was offering services for sex. I don't think money exchanged hands.
Money didn't exchange hands to my recollection. However, if I'm remembering the facts of the case appropriately, there were instances where he offered, I would say, to alter fees or reduce fees or things of that nature in exchange for sex. So I think money was in fact an element. One of the cases though did not involve sexual inappropriate contents or comments was N. Ray Snyder, where this court suspended the attorney for conflict of interest case with regard to two real estate transactions that he was involved in exchange for legal fees. But one of the reasons that this court put forth as to why they suspended him rather than a reprimand or some other sort of discipline was that he was steadfast in his refusal to acknowledge, you know, the inappropriateness of his actions. And again, in this case, Mr. Lacks was very forthcoming and cooperated throughout the entire process with the Office of Chief Disciplinary Counsel, and we did not have those.
And he continued factors. Representing the complainant, is that correct?
Yes, sir, he did. There were two cases that we cited from other jurisdictions. One was In re Pyatt from Arizona, where the attorney was reprimanded, again, where he had no prior disciplinary history. But in that case, which is different from this one, there was repeated sexual misconduct, and it involved more than one client. And again, I would point out that we are of the view that our position here is supported by the fact that this is one incident, although we would acknowledge a very, serious incident, but one in a otherwise stellar legal career, 46 plus years of practice, and again, only one other prior disciplinary action back in 1995. One of the other cases that we cited was In re Yarbrough from South Carolina, where the attorney was reprimanded despite repeated sexual advances towards his client, and unlike the Pyatt case, he did have a rather extensive prior disciplinary record, if you will, and the court found still that based upon their rules that a reprimand was the appropriate discipline. So we're asking that this court find that a reprimand is the appropriate discipline, that it's in accordance with the case law in Missouri, is in accordance with the facts in this case, given the mitigating factors of the American Bar Association's standards for professional conduct. We found no aggregating factors, and the mitigating factors, again, being the stellar legal career of over 46 years, plus the cooperation with the Office of Disciplinary Counsel, as well as his lack of any real disciplinary record. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Good morning, may it please the court. I am not gonna stand up here and justify the comment that Mr. Lax made to his client. It's despicable, it's cannot be justified, cannot even really be explained. That's not why I am here. I am here because, Judge Breckenridge, you mentioned an interesting point. This case really is kind of fact-dependent. The truth is that the comments were all made in one meeting in May of 2010, I believe, or 2011. Were subsequently almost immediately apologized for by Mr. Lax. And his apology was accepted by his client. Mr. Lax, at that time, was undergoing some counseling. He had some problems. It was a totally inappropriate comment, totally inappropriate, and was apologized for. Apology was accepted. And Judge Russell, you asked for the time frame. The comments happened in May. The complaint was filed in September. Mr. Lax's representation of the client continued without complaint until September, and even thereafter, the complaint was filed. The complaint was filed coincidentally with the client receiving Mr. Lax's bill for services rendered. So there's a little bit of mitigating factor in there.
What if any input at all has been inquired of as to the client as to what she thinks would be an appropriate discipline in this case?
Yeah, Judge Fisher, I of course have had no contact with the complainant, nor could I.
And I plan to ask the question of your opposing counsel,
yeah,
but I just didn't.
I honestly don't know the answer to that question. I do know this, that we have not heard from the complainant, and Mr. Lax did continue her representation, and to my understanding, satisfactory in the motion to modify. So I cannot answer your question as to how she feels, but given the fact that Mr. Lax did apologize and that apology was accepted, I think that she would, it's hard to speculate, but I don't know that she would be opposed to this.
Was that in the record anywhere about the apology and her acceptance of the apology?
I believe it was in our initial response to the complaint. We didn't dispute the facts. One of the things that the court should consider in this matter is this was a conversation between two individuals. what would have been easier than for Mr. Lacks to say that never happened? There's no record of it. There's no written record of this thing. But Mr. Lacks freely acknowledged that, yeah, I made this comment, and boy, it was bad. And in all our negotiations with the Office of Chief Disciplinary Counsel, I wanted an admonition. You know, I figured Mr. Lacks apologized. He did what was necessary. This is not repeated conduct. It was wrong. And I thought an admonition would suffice, but the Chief Disciplinary Counsel, through their zealousness, recommended the reprimand. And Mr. Lacks, who's here in the courtroom today, by the way, because he wanted to face you in person to show that he is interested, and Mr. Lacks was the one who said, no, I did this. I will accept the reprimand. And the case is different from the cases, I think, Judge Wilson, you mentioned the Howard case. Not to bore the court with a little bit of history, but before any of you were on the court, maybe the first or second or third time I appeared before this court, I represented the bar in a case against Mr. Howard for sexual misconduct. Mr. Howard didn't even show up for the oral argument. And I lost. And the reason I lost is because at that time, and we're talking probably, Alan and I were talking this morning, probably late 1980s, early 1990s, there wasn't a rule that covered sexual misconduct by an attorney. So now we have the rules, maybe in response to that case, I don't know, but we have the rules, and the rules are there to be enforced. But here we have a very isolated incident with a gentleman who has practiced for over 40 years, has been a great credit to the profession, both in bar activities and civic activities, and he made a mistake, and he's willing to pay for that mistake. There also has been, by the way, a punishment, and I want to talk to the court about this because it's something, as the court knows, I have been involved a little bit in disciplinary matters. The rule changed last summer that allowed for the publication of information has been absolutely devastating to Mr. Lacks. As a result of the publication of the information in this case, he has lost his right to be an arbitrator in securities matters, the organization that sanctions that has pulled his permission or his authority to be an arbitrator in securities matters. It was something that he was counting on for his retirement. It's no longer there. He has been held up to public ridicule and scrutiny. If the court will indulge me, the Lawyer's Weekly article that came out after the publication, there's six informations that they talked about here. Four of them are sexual. I mean, we're getting to the stage where unfortunately, and Judge Stith will sympathize because we both share an interest in medieval history, there were two learned professions, medicine and law. And we are being reduced, because of certain things that we do, to tabloidism. And that has an effect on people. It can't be fixed. One of the other articles in this article, when the information was published, was another client of mine who was subsequently exonerated. But the damage is done. The damage is done. It can't be undone. Mr. Lacks, for whatever reason, the public will point and the profession will point, already has, no matter what this court does, he already has a scarlet A on his forehead with the members of the bar, the members of the community, and he has paid a substantial economic cost already for a very, very bad taste, stupid comment that I would argue, Judge Wilson, you talk about a crime, is totally out of character. For Mr. Lacks. Certainly, I can't find any evidence of anybody coming forward before. I can't find any evidence of somebody coming forward subsequently. The crime issue, very frankly, Judge Wilson, I never considered it. I'm just an ambulance chasing lawyer from St. Louis, okay?
I may not have been here too long, but I'm smart enough to know better than that.
That may be a misdemeanor. I don't know if it's a felony or misdemeanor. And like Ms. Wilson, I don't know what the elements are. Okay, but there's never been any charges. Okay, I don't know what else to say to the court.
A lot would be dependent on intent, which wasn't tried.
Yes.
Whether it was joke or serious and so forth?
I don't think it was a joke. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say it was a joke. I think I would defend the case a lot differently if Mr. Lax told me he was joking. Okay? I think when he said it, he was serious. And that's why it's despicable. If I sat up here and defended this comment, and I know almost all of you personally, and you all know that if I defended this comment, this thing's being recorded, and I probably couldn't go home tonight. Okay? So, you know, so I'm not going to defend it. But, you know, we like to think we don't. And we all have moments where we do something that we are ashamed of and that never should have happened. And that are somewhat inexplicable given our histories. And that's exactly what happened with Mr. Lax here. I think the recommended punishment is pretty harsh. You know, it's not an admonition. I mean, this is a public reprimand. He will be publicly reprimanded. That decision was his. And I would ask the court respectfully to concur with the recommendations of the Office of Chief Disciplinary Counsel. They have investigated, they have zealously prosecuted this case, and we would ask you to concur in their recommendations and also the recommendations of the hearing panel. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Counsel.
Just a couple of things. Your Honor, you asked whether or not the underlying complainant was inquired of in terms of the type of discipline. So the answer to that question is no, but I did have multiple conversations with her during the investigative process. I did not ask her what sort of discipline she thought was appropriate because it's not my practice to do so. And part of that is because in doing this since 2007 or so, often the complaining party feels that every lawyer should be disbarred no matter what they did. And so I don't necessarily find that useful. Many times they volunteer what they think should happen to them, and oftentimes they volunteer that they should be disbarred. And so if that's something that you think that, you know, in the future that we should start doing, you know, we're certainly more than willing to do so, but I did not do so.
And she didn't volunteer anything?
No, she did not.
Can you point us in the record, is there any stipulation or finding with respect to whether there was an apology and whether the complainant accepted?
It's on A15 in page of the joint recommendation for discipline. You say, unlike in Howard, he apologized for his statements to FSM shortly after he made them.
Yes.
I don't know where else it is. But it's
yes, that was, you're absolutely right. As I was sitting there trying to find it for purposes of coming back here, that is the only place where I saw reference to it as well. And so I apologize that it wasn't more thoroughly placed in the record, but the answer to that is absolutely yes.
Well, just a comment. I mean, if that's a fact that's essential or should be prominent in our consideration, to not have a stipulation about it puts us in an awkward position, as does Mr. Mandel's argument that Mr. Lax, his career has been a credit to the profession. I have no doubt that that's true, given that Mr. Mandel said it, but there's no stipulation about his career, about his other activities, about the credit that he's performed. So that's offered as argument, but it isn't. It's a fact. And we don't have a stipulation or any evidence to go on other than the word of counsel.
I believe in the 1970s, Mr. Lax was chairman of the Board of Legal Services, legal aid of the city and county of St. Louis. That's a fact.
And going back to my question, Mr. Mandel indicated he thought that this case had been zealously investigated and pursued. So are you representing to the court that the fact is that no inappropriate comments were made other than on May 16th, or that's your understanding and you're not, the record, your information doesn't answer that question?
May I have permission to continue?
Yes, you may.
Yes. In my conversations with the complainant, she confirmed with me that was the only time that it happened. It was on the May 16th. I don't remember when I first conversated with her, but just judging from when the complaints are filed and when they usually get sent out to us, you know, to begin the investigation. So I would say at least 30 to 60 days after the complaint was filed, I had my first conversation with her. And at that time, and the time since then, she shared that that was the only time that that happened.
And is there some explanation for why the event happened in May and she didn't file the complaint until September?
No, I did not inquire about the delay in filing the complaint in September. What I do recall from the early ons of the case was that in addition to her filing a complaint, her father filed a complaint as well. But again, because it was her complaint to bring forward, that's the one that we investigated, was the complaint of the actual underlying.
Do you have any evidence of any counseling he was going through? As Mr. Randell mentioned, that he was going through a rough patch. Do you have any evidence of counseling or anything else that occurred at that, about that same time?
No, and I did not talk to the underlying complainant about that either. Once the matter went to the disciplinary hearing, once the joint stipulation went to the disciplinary hearing panel, and from that point through, I've not had any conversation with her since that time.
Is there anything in the record about fees owing or fees being forgiven or anything?
No, no.
Can you take a look at page 5 of your informant's brief? Can you take a quick look at that? Because there's been a lot of questioning about whether there was only one incident or whether they were repeated. And that page really seems to speak to repeated.
Right, and it was repeated, but again, in that same meeting, the various offers and her denying, turning down the offers, all happened in that same meeting.
What he's referencing is that the language of the complaint appears to say during the representation he made repeated unwanted sexually inappropriate comments, which appears to be during the representation appears to be very different than during a single office visit.
I can understand your confusion that perhaps the sentence, if we had begun it where we ended by saying during a visit to his office on May 16, 2011, which is at the end of the sentence, maybe we could have alleviated some
that
of
that was
the,
intended to modify the whole sentence,
yes.
Not just that last clause.
Yes. Yes.
Any further questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you for
that. We take it under advisement.